them almost like a piece of clay. And, you know, depending on who the sculptors are, depends on the finished product. You know, for work, a lot of times I'm afforded, you know, long rides to work. You know, sometimes I'm headed down to Fort Myers and, you know, Ocala or wherever. And I, you know, on those trips, I just allow my mind to kind of, you know, take off. And I usually like try and keep it centered around life issues and spiritual ideas and things of that sort. And last week I was headed, you know, down south, and I was kind of thinking about this talk, and I started reflecting back on my life, and you know, it kind of makes me chuckle because, you know, up until about the age of 9, I was a pretty normal kid. You know, I had a bicycle, a skateboard. You couldn't drag me in the house without a tow truck. You know, the lights would be on and my mom would be outside screaming, and you still couldn't get me in the house. And you hear a lot of people from the podium, you know, they a lot of times you'll hear that, you know, when they didn't like themselves, they did like a geological change. You know, they would move to meet new people and have new experiences and stuff like that. Well, what I did was I had complete persona changes, you know. I didn't like who I was. I would just change who I was. And, you know, up until about the age of 9, I was pretty normal. You know, from about 9 to 12, I was hanging out with the burnouts, and I was one of those guys. And, you know, neighborhood kids, you know. And from about 12 to 15, I was surfer guy, you know. Skipping school, going to the beach all the time, and hanging out there. And then from like 15 to 18, I was a black guy, you know. can you see the natural progression here? You know, you know, from the ages of 18 to 21, I was prison guy, you know, trying to flow right under the radar as best as I could. And you know, from 21 to let's say 34, I was party guy. You know, and that's the thing. When I got here at the age of 34, I still thought I was 21 years old, and I still lived my life like I was 21 years old. But, you know, going back to the age of 9, you know, back when the first sculptors, if you will, got their hands on me, and, you know, the kids in my neighborhood were much older than me. You know, they were in high school, and, you know, the babysitter who my mom had come over and watch me at night, she was older, and they taught me things on, you know, they taught me how to, you know, do outside issues and, you know, fight and, you know, talk to girls and all the stuff that a 9-year-old kid really does have no business doing. But that's what I was introduced to at the time. And let me preface this by saying, in no way were my outside influences to blame for my alcoholism. I'm an alcoholic because I never want the party to end. I absolutely love what alcohol does for me, and it doesn't matter if it's 7 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm ready to go, and because I love that feeling. And I chase that feeling for years and years and years. So, you know, I don't know what really happened in between these, like, persona changes to make me get a different group of friends. Or, I mean, there was no, like, big life event. And I say it, that, you know, it was me who I didn't like who I was, and that was the reason for the change. But it just seemed like my environment changed. And so my persona changed, and the people I hung with changed. And I always fell right into the middle of whatever the people around me were doing. And that was solely because I was people-pleasing. I wanted to be accepted. I wanted to be a part of the group, and I wanted to be liked. But what I would also do is I tried to be the biggest and largest at whatever we were doing, you know, just so I stood out and so that, you know, people would like me. You know, so as I got older, and I guess into my adolescence and stuff, I mean, somewhere along the way, I picked up a lot of anger and rage. And by the time I was in my 15 to 18, you know, year span, my anger had gotten the best of me, and I just was out to prove that I was a badass. And I surrounded myself with a lot of situations and some people who really didn't have my best interest at heart, and who allowed me to go out there and be the biggest and baddest, and that wound me up in prison at the age of 18. And, you know, I've done a lot of things in my past that I'm not necessarily proud of, but I don't know. I mean, yeah, if I look back, I mean, there's some things that I would definitely would do different. But I do realize that my experiences, my past experiences, have made me the man that I am today. And I don't believe that without those life experiences that I would be able, or I would have never got to the point to where I was ready to make a change in my life. So, you know, everything started out innocent enough. You know, I was just, you know, drinking and doing other things to hang out and have fun and stuff like that. And so when I got out of prison at the age of 21, I had figured I had just missed the best 3 years of my life, and it was time to make up for lost time, and I was legal. It wasn't that, you know, I didn't have a problem getting things before that, but now it was just, you know, no holds barred. And the time that I had when at that point in my life was just, it was, I never wanted it to end. And so I kept that going for years until I was 34, but somewhere in the middle, or probably towards the late middle, things started to change. It was no longer centered around fun or hanging out or social events. It was about just staying that way all the time. And the further and further I went with it, the more pathetic I got. I mean, by the end, I was just one of those drunks that was just rolling around on the floor with, you know, stayed drunk 24/7 and could not function without alcohol. And that's a horrible feeling to have to drink in order just to stay well instead of drink to have fun or to, you know, get away or escape or whatever it is. Those days were long gone for me. I couldn't wake up in the morning and go to work without drinking. And, you know, somewhere along the line, you know, I knew I was an alcoholic for many, many years. But I would laugh about it with a beer in my hand. Of course I'm an alcoholic. You know, let's drink another one. And the people who cared the most about me, you know, not a lot of people said much about it, like employers and stuff like that, because I was a pretty functional alcoholic. I showed up in the morning. I might have had beer on my breath, and I might have had a little buzz, but I got to work, and I did a good job while I was there. And so a lot of people on that front didn't say much to me, but the people, you know, that were closest to me, my friends that are still in my life that partied right next to me for, you know, just as hard as I did, who still drink and do other things today, but, you know, they would confront me every once in a while and say, "Look, brother, you're getting a little out of hand here. You know, do you remember what you did last night?" And I'm like, "No, what?" You know, and that in itself kept me drinking for a long time too, because I was running from what I did the night before. I had embarrassed myself and my friends and my family more times than I can remember. But those people are the people who loved me through that and are still in my life today. And are emphatic that, you know, they're glad to have me back, because they knew who I truly was, and I had lost myself in alcohol. I was a completely different person, and like I said, I was full of anger and rage, and I can flip on you at the drop of a hat. You looked at me wrong, and it was time to go, you know. And I'm fortunate enough to I mean, I don't think anybody in the rooms is actually. Watched me, you know, lose my temper. And my temper had got me in more trouble and caused me more pain than times that I can remember. You know, somewhere, you know, back towards the front or the beginning, when my behavior started acting out, you know, they thought the best thing for me to do was, or for them to do, was to send me off to military school. And the one thing about me is that, yeah, I'll fall into my environment if I want to. If I don't want to, Chris is bucking. Chris is going to buck the system. And I did that. until they threw me out. They tried everything. They tried physical punishment. They tried boring me to death. They tried, you know, I mean, literally sitting in a room with absolutely nothing to do but look at the wall for 8 hours at a time. I mean, they tried everything. They tried to, you know, get this, you know, this defiance out of me. And the only thing that actually worked was, you know, what they did. They reverse psychology my butt. They started letting me do well. You know, they gave me stuff that wasn't really deserved, you know, and they gave me rank and they started giving me privileges that I hadn't earned. But once I got a taste of those privileges, I wanted to keep those privileges. And so I started doing better until inevitably something happened and I lost my temper and everything went out the door. You know, when I got out of military school, I had a pretty good set of friends prior to going to military school. They were good people. They weren't getting into a lot of trouble. You know, they were, you know, we all did kid stuff. You know, mischievous stuff, but nothing really hardcore. But when I went away, when I came back, I went back to public school after getting kicked out of another private school that I was only there for about 4 months. But when I got to go back with them, the dynamic had changed. The friendship just wasn't as close as it was. I mean, we grew up, you know, together, and we had been through a lot of stuff together, but in that time that I was gone, they had formed other relationships, and the ones that stayed around, you know, they were stronger. And I just, at that point, I remember feeling like an outsider. And right around that time, I dropped out of school and fell in with a new group of friends. And these guys were into some not so nice things, you know, guns, gang activity, you know, drugs and robbing and stealing and doing whatever we could to support, you know, our lifestyle without having to work. And I did that for a while, up until the time it landed me in prison. You know, there's many times in my life, you know, before I got here, I don't believe that I was ever an atheist, and I don't believe that I ever did not believe in God. I always imagined or knew that something was out there, but I always figured he had more important things to do than deal with me and my problems. And so I wasn't capable at the time to see God working in my life, even through those good and tough times. I didn't see him save my life when I jumped off the Reddington Pier and hit into, you know, 3 feet of water and hit the sandbar. I didn't see him when I was so drunk, reach down from heaven and grab the steering wheel and get me home. I was so drunk to the point to where I passed out in the seat with my foot on the brake and not even in park. I mean, that's how bad I had gotten drunk, you know. And I didn't see him walk right next to me through prison without me being harmed, you know. I wish, you know, other than the directions that are so clearly outlined in our book of Alcoholics Anonymous, I wish I could tell you how I went from there to where I am today. But to be honest, I mean, a lot of it for me came with age. I was not capable of getting sober when I was y'all's age. I respect you guys so much for what you guys have been able to do, because believe me, Chris is watching. You know, I see you getting your degrees. I see you getting married and having children. I see you starting businesses and, you know, getting your careers, and it's amazing to me what you guys can accomplish. And I thought that time was over for me. I had all but destroyed my life, and I never thought that any type of normal life for me was even possible. But God has shown me his power and illustrated it in my life, which is indeed miraculous. I never thought in a million years that I would be where I am today. Let's see. Kind of lost my train of thought there. I was finishing getting drunk, you know. For me, it had to get to a point to where before I was even ready to make a change, I had to be completely tired of the way that I was living my life. And not just sick and tired of being sick and tired, I had to be tired to the point to where I was willing to listen to another way of life, where I was willing to allow someone to teach me how to live. I can tell you that everything that I know about being a man, I learned from my sponsor, and I learned from the time that I was 34 up until now. When I got here, I was just a grown-up kid in a man's body. I was not capable of taking care of myself, much less another human being, my daughter, or being a good son, being a good father, being a good friend, being a good son, you know. None of that. I was so selfish and self-centered that it didn't matter what my actions, how it affected you. It was just what I got in the end. And so when I woke up one day and I looked at the mirror and I knew I was killing myself, and when I was completely disgusted with what was looking back at me, and I looked and I remember looking myself right in the eyes and go, "Chris, you're killing yourself. There has got to be a better way to live life." And that's when my journey began. I mean, that was shortly after I had choked down enough beer to keep from throwing up foam and bloodshot eyes and just, I mean, a wreck, an absolute wreck. And it didn't take right away. I wasn't willing. I was willing to give up a little bit, but I still wanted to do things my way. You know, I still wanted to because I still thought that I could not manage. I was not managing this thing, and I knew I was not managing this thing, but I wanted to get well on my terms, and it just doesn't work that way for anyone who thinks it does. Didn't for me. I'll just put it that way. So I had I was working with a guy, and we partied pretty hard together. And I watched him wind up losing his job and over not showing up from partying the night before. And he got sober. And I didn't really realize it, but I was watching him. I kind of would like to think he's not drinking anymore, let's move on, you know, whatever. But I saw what he was doing, because he still stayed in my life, and I kind of saw what he was doing. And when I started getting to the point where I started becoming willing to take a look at changing my life, I'd call him up, you know, and say, "Hey, Bobby, you know, how's it going? You know, I'm thinking about, this, that, or it." And he goes, "I'll tell you what, meet me up at the convenience store. You know, I'll have a coffee, and you can drink a beer if you want to, and let's just talk." So we were pretty close friends, so he told me right up front that, you know, "Hey, listen, I can't sponsor you. You know, we're too close, but I can hook you up with some guys." And that's exactly what he did. You know, he took me up to 33 and introduced me around to a couple of guys. And the one guy who I really wanted to be my sponsor, Craig D., he only took on two guys at once. And it just so happened he had two guys at the time. And one of his pigeons was ready to start sponsoring. And so he handed me off to him. And let me tell you something, my sponsor was handpicked by God himself. He could not, me and him could not be further opposite than each other. But at the same time, he knows exactly how to talk to me, how to deal with me when I'm angry. You know, I remember one time at 86 days of sobriety, I had relapsed, and I called him up drunk, and I'm going off, and I'm cussing him out, and I said, "You know what, this isn't going to work," you know, and he's like, "You know what, Chris, you're absolutely right, this isn't going to work this way," and it took, you know, I'm expecting somebody to start screaming back at me, because that's how I communicated, you know, we intimidation, violence, you know, that's what I was used to, and he wasn't willing to do that. He wasn't going to fight with me. He wasn't going to argue with me. He was just going to say, "You know what? You're right. you're absolutely right. And what are you going to say to that? You know, I learned that when you're fighting with somebody, you know, just turn. Who said that? Katie and Charlie or somebody had said that when you're fighting, just turn around and say, you know what, you're right. And it's impossible to argue with somebody when you. And I just, you know, hung up the phone. And it's always been that way. He knows how to deal with me. And it's just been an amazing journey. One more thing about sponsorship that I want to talk about, and it's more about being a sponsee than anything, is that an observation that I have noticed, especially through sponsoring other guys, is that a lot of people, myself included at times, do not use their sponsors in the way that they are designed to be used. Now, granted, nowhere in our book will you see sponsorship and what that entails. But for me, when I got here, I was not capable of managing my own life in any capacity. So what I had to do, in essence, before I gained a power greater than myself that could help me with these issues, I basically had to turn my life over to the care of my sponsor first and allow him to show me the road, allow him to teach me. And you would think that that would change. You know, my job as a sponsee when I first got here was to drive my sponsor nuts because I need to let him know what's going on up here for two reasons. One, it shows him where I'm at mentally, and he can kind of treat accordingly. And two, it gets it out of here and on the table. And because as long as it stays in here, I heard this at the beginning, I cannot fix my thinking with my thinking. If I put it out on the table and share it with other people, maybe, just maybe, I'll hear a different point of view that might make sense to me. And maybe I can change my thinking just that much. So I ran everything by my sponsor, everything. You know, and I would go to him with stuff like, hey, Sponce, I was just in Best Buy and I saw this great TV, you know, and I think I'm going to buy it. And he's like, well, let's just hold on for a second. He's like, all your financial amends made? No. Might want to think about that. I just did this last week. No, not that story. The one I'm about to tell you. Now, I've made right with all my financial amends, and I'm sitting in a good place right now. But I had a kind of a moral dilemma about a week ago. You know, Mary and I were contemplating getting some car repairs done, you know, either on our dime or if we were going to make an insurance claim. And she was kind of struggling with it, and she gave me her struggle or, you know, her problem with it. And, you know, I could see her point of view, so I run it by my sponsor. You know, and he goes, you know what? Because I said, you know, there's a lot of gray area here, you know, Dave. And he's like, yeah, there. I can see a little gray area here. He said, and this is what it is. He says, you know what? Let me call you back in an hour. I want to think about it. So he calls me back, and he says stuff like, you don't have a moral dilemma here. What you have is a financial situation. And he's like, you know, because I asked him, is it lying by omission? You know, plain and simple. You know, because I still, you know, I get twisted with that from time to time. And it wouldn't be the wrong thing to do to make an insurance claim, but it may be the wrong thing to neglect to tell them that I did it. Or just to... you know? Just don't give up too much information is what the adjuster told me, you know. That should have been my first clue, but no, I had to run that by me because, you know, there's money at stake here. So at the end of the day, I can afford to do it. So let's remove the moral dilemma all the way and just do what's right. And, you know, that's the difference with me today is because I do care about doing the right thing. I do care about trying to perform God's will in all my affairs. Not 100% successful at that, you know, and I don't think that I always will. But I can tell you that I'm not stepping on the toes of my fellows. I can tell you that you know, I very rarely get angry anymore. Like I said before, I was able to throw down at the drop of a hat. And today there's not too much that can get me fired up. You know, the one thing that was a thorn in my side for a long time was my relationship with my daughter, and I could not fathom the fact that I had no control there, that I could not make her want to be in my life because, you know, I had never done anything to really push or to cause this thing. But she's 15, you know, and I was the one voice of structure, once I got sober, of discipline, you know, trying to teach her life lessons to prepare her to go out into this world. And what I failed to realize, and what I've just realized recently, is that although, in my opinion, it is a parent's job to do that, but only if you're afforded that opportunity. And you can't do that to someone who's not going to listen or someone who's not going to allow you. Just like if I was not willing to listen to my sponsor when I first got here, there is absolutely nothing that could be done. And he probably would have been smart enough to take his hands off of it and allow God to push me back. And recently, just recently, within the last few months, is when I've been able to, you know, let go of the situation and just allow it to happen, allow it to come back to me. And it's so much easier that way. Trust me, it's my whole attitude would change in sobriety. I mean, I would just be, you know, irritable, restless, and discontent. And that was really the only source of any type of negative influence on my life. And every once in a while I get glimpses, because I pray every night, you know, God, whatever your will is, you know. And she sent me a picture text the other day of herself. Because I'm texting her two or three times a week, you know, trying to make her laugh, trying to, you know, on her first day of school, you know, just being silly and stupid and trying to keep it light, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Nothing. Zilch. So I figured, oh, man, she's really pissed off this time. You know, what have I done? You know, that's where my mind starts going. And out of the blue, she just sends me a picture text, you know, telling me that I'm the proud owner of a sophomore this year, you know. And so that little glimpse of hope just tells me that, you know, she's hearing me. Whenever I stick in a spiritual message here and there, or whenever I, you know, as long as I'm not, you know, and that was my mistake, is I was trying to pound that over her head, because I felt, my opinion was, is that was the only source of sanity that she was getting. And I won't even go there for anybody who's wondering. All right. My relationship with God today. I don't know how this happened. I cannot explain it other than the clear-cut directions, you know, laid out in our book. I can tell you that I did have a spiritual experience at about 7 months of sobriety, after I had done steps 4 and 5, and I was, 6 and 7, and I started to work this thing. I started to get involved. I jumped in the middle of this thing, and one of the guys that I respected a lot, he looked at me and he told me, he says, grab onto this thing with both hands and don't let go, because it's going to jerk you around and you're going to enjoy the journey. But whatever you do, don't let go. And that's been my experience. But other than that spiritual experience at 7 months of sobriety, it's been of the educational variety for me. These are things that I have had to learn throughout the way. And age for me, it was huge. I was a very late person to mature, if you will. I mean, I was just not ready to let, you know. But life has a way of teaching you these things, regardless, whether you like it or not, you know. and it will keep presenting the same issue over and over and over again until you take a look at it, or until you've learned, or So from the time that I thought that God had better things to do than to worry about me, to being able to see all the times where he's reached down and that is absolutely laid his hand on me, has come through a series of experiences that I thought were going to be the worst thing that's ever happened in the world. Whether it be financial, whether it be people dying, whether it be, just life blowing up the way it does. Without going through those experiences, I wouldn't know what the good times were, And going through that, I can look back on those situations and see exactly where God was working in my life. And to the point to where I was able to start, at some point, taking off the blinders and being able to see God work in my life in real time. And just look up and say, thanks, God. I feel you. I feel you working. And I know that to be true in all my affairs today with my daughter, with, I don't even know why I'm going to bring this up, but just popped in my head, so why not? Got back in the gym about a month ago, and, I'm getting a little older, so I wanted to start getting healthy and taking care of myself, and my energy levels were low and stuff like that. And I was getting out of the shower this morning, and I did this, and I noticed a lump back here, like a mass. And instead of getting freaked out about it, going, oh, my God, I got cancer, or whatever it is, the first thought that entered my mind is, God, thank you for allowing me to start getting healthy, because whatever this is, I would have never seen it had I not started exercising. And whatever it is, I caught it early enough to where we can do something about it. And there's not fear there. It's just a matter of this. These are the things that we're going to start going through. My life has gone through, my body, my mind, everything has gone through these changes that I never, because I was that guy that you would hear the older guys go, oh, wait until you hit this age. I was like, I'm seeing it. And I'm feeling it, It is real, I can tell you, I can assure you. I'll close with this. Going through life, having all the different sculptors that have had their hands on me, molding my mind and my life into one way or another, I cannot think of a better way to have my life and my mind molded by my brothers and sisters in Alcoholics Anonymous, the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, my sponsor, and God's love and grace. Thank you.